Riccio today, and it is Canucks game day taking on the Carolina Hurricanes, and we're coming to you live from the Kintec studio on the road. Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? We are live at Rogers Arena tonight, and we are going to be chatting with Frank Saravalli coming up shortly. Don Taylor is going to join us a bit later on as well. And, of course, Puck Drop, Canucks and Carolina Hurricanes coming up just after 7 from Rogers Arena. And as always, get in touch with us on the Dunbar Lumber Text Inbox, 650-650. And we'll interact with you throughout the show here and into the postgame show tonight. So a long day of Canucks hockey and chat coming to you this evening. Bick.
What's up?
What's happening, man? How you feeling?
Chilling. Look, they're on a four-game winning streak. What's there to be concerned about right now?
I mean, Pedersen scored last game, too.
We just don't need to talk about it anymore.
Well, hey, I'm sure we will still talk about Elias Pedersen.
Let's just sit here in silence for 2 hours.
Right.
And then pregame will start.
and of course, Arshdeep Bains scored his first goal.
Oh.
And, hey, it happened right before Dualdi night here at Rogers Arena tonight.
I was wondering on the way in today, because, you know, we sat here on Saturday for the postgame show, and I was like, oh, man, he did it on Hockey Night in Punjabi. Like, what an amazing moment that was. And I was like, oh, right, it's Dualdi night tonight. Would have been better on Monday, would have been better on Saturday. I still think Saturday, nationwide broadcast and everything like that. I still think Saturday. But yeah, like this, the layers to it
right.
All is just adding up.
What better night to get your second?
Hey.
Right?
Thinking man right there.
So we'll see how it goes for Arshdeep Bains. You know, when it comes to the Canucks, too. It's been a really interesting start to the season, right? And now that Pedersen has scored as well. And we'll
see how he plays. A tale of two starts?
Yeah, very much. Lost the first three, have won the last four games. It does mirror in many ways how they started last campaign as well. And we'll see if they can continue that winning streak the same way they did, of course. But now that, you know, Pedersen scored the goal, and his game still has to get better, no doubt, doesn't feel like there's any massive concern outside of the obvious one, which is the goaltender, Thatcher Demko. But I was chatting with Halford and Bruff this morning. If it wasn't for Kevin Lankinen, like, where would we be far as the conversation for goaltending goals, right? So right now, we're all wondering about Thatcher Demko. The good news on Dakota Joshua is he is nearing a return. Probably not on this homestand, but probably soon. We'll see if he does a conditioning stint. But the feelings are a lot different all of a sudden on this Monday. Now, it can always change with one bad loss or a couple of losses or whatever. But the bigger question right now remains goaltending-wise. But with Lankinen, the way he's played, I don't think people are too concerned for the time being, at the very least.
No, and the way Ian McIntyre detailed it with us on Saturday, too, on the postgame show, just talking about how Lankinen, you know, picked it and waited and ended up choosing Vancouver based on the opportunity and all this sort of stuff. And, you know, I like hearing that, a guy who bet on himself, because I'm stunned that he's ended up here, right? He is a bona fide, you know, solid goalie, and he's done plenty through his four seasons in the league to prove that he's at a certain standard, so that he was willing to take this opportunity with some murky waters, and he's taken it and run with it here.
Yeah, he really has. And the team the Canucks are playing tonight, the Carolina Hurricanes, have some trouble in net. Now, they've played really well recently. They've won, you know, four in a row, and they're on a good stretch here on this road trip. But Freddie Anderson left the team with an injury. Frank Saravalli reported on that today, and it looks like Kochetkov is getting the start here tonight. And let's welcome in Frank Saravalli into the conversation here on Canuck Central. Some good reporting today on the Freddie Anderson situation, Frank. But the good news is it's not a recurrence, it seems, of that blood clot issue that kept him out not too long ago as well.
Yeah, I think that's the first place your mind wanders to. Yes, Freddie Anderson has had a pretty extensive and frequent injury history, but the last one that kept him out for the longest, dealing with that blood clotting issue, I think that was certainly everyone's first fear, and good to know that that's not the case. And it sounds like, if you're reading between the lines from Coach Rod Brind'Amour, who said, quote, he came up a little bit gimpy, sounds like that is a lower body issue, and I know the Canes are hoping that it won't be long term.
What do we make of the Hurricanes so far here, Frank? They're kind of just doing it again, you know, stellar through the regular season, and I don't know if they've drawn the attention in previous years of, say, like the Toronto Maple Leafs, where it's, oh, well, they just got to do it in the playoffs, right? They've won a couple of rounds, they've been to an Eastern Conference final. Like, well, what's the status of the Hurricanes in general as we get ready to see them tonight?
Yeah, Bick, I would say that the big thing that stands out to me is just the significant change that occurred year over year for this team. I mean, for the last handful of years, you could make a really solid case that from 1 to 6, the Carolina Hurricanes had the best defense core in the NHL. No more Brett Pesce. Tony D'Angelo is playing in Russia. You know, they were able to re-sign Jacob Slavin. Brady Shea is now in Nashville. You know, it's just there's been a lot of influx there, and I think that part stands out. They had Jake Guentzel last year. He ends up signing in Tampa. It's just not, at least on paper, quite good as a team that they've had the last few years. The interesting thing about it is the Canes, they wouldn't fight you on that notion. Like, I think even internally, they've recognized that, you know, while there may be a slight step back this year in terms of regular season points accumulated, that they still feel like they're a pretty firm playoff team, and it's hard to argue with the results that we've seen so far to start the season. They've played a lot fewer games than most, but I think for the most part should still be a really difficult team to play against that plays fast and plays with structure. And even though they're not spending a lot on it, they're still getting really good goaltending, particularly for the money.
Yeah, they certainly have, especially with, you know, what they're getting from a guy like Kochetkov as well, and we'll see how it all ultimately goes. The other bit of news from today was Jake McCabe signing an extension with the Toronto Maple Leafs, the defenseman who was slated to be a UFA, and he's 31 years old, but he gets a four-year contract, defers money, which is something we're seeing a bit more in the league all of a sudden. But as far as what's happening with other UFAs too, is this a sign that any real capable top four UFA defenseman is most likely not going to hit the market by the time we get around to July?
Yeah, I mean, much to the chagrin of me and anyone else who likes free agent frenzy and anyone who likes action, I mean, it feels like any quality player, even guys that are now stretching into their 30s, like McCabe, is that deal is going to take him through his 36-year-old season. And no, it's not an onerous cap hit. And no, certainly as the cap by that point will be probably $115 to $120 million a year, it's certainly not going to hurt the Toronto Maple Leafs. To me, you know, it feels like maybe a case of some teams just absolutely falling in. And I'm not saying with McCabe, but just the overall market concept of not everyone making it to free agency, or mostly no one making it to free agency, feels like maybe a little bit of teams getting themselves into some trouble with players that they fall in love with that they overcommit to, because you're not seeing players for the most part take a big discount on term, and the market value prices, like, they're not really giving up a whole lot relative to market to end up staying with their team. So I think while that might provide a real nice security blanket for managers to lay their heads on the pillow at night and feel good about their situation, not just for entertainment's sake, but I think I'd like to just see the market become a little bit more free-flowing.
Well, it's not even so much, you know, falling in love for me. It's I think it's operating out of fear, because you see just the names start going off the boards here, Frank, in free agency. And, you know, the three avenues teams have to get better are the draft, free agency, and the trade market. And the draft is the long process. The free agency is the quick fix, but there's no players there anymore. And I just wonder if the trade market is going to be a thing that picks up at any point. Our teams are looking at a navigate of how to actually get better.
Well, not only that, but you're going to see the trade market pick up with players that fall into the exact category that I was just kind of hinting at and referencing, which is an overcommitment on either term or dollars.
Right.
I know of one team in particular, the Columbus Blue Jackets, who are actually, you know, they're pretty active in getting some calls from teams around the league saying, hey, what would it cost if we were to move this contract to you? They've got tons of cap space. They're not actually hitting the salary cap floor at this very moment in time with the dispensation that they received from the Gaudreau tragedy. And they're in a spot where they probably have to spend some money here in relatively short order, particularly if they're going to be moving pieces out at the deadline. And teams are already dissatisfied with some deals that are on the books. There's always a few on, probably one or two on every team for the most part around the league, but when you overcommit, when you want to feel that security and you operate out of fear, to your point, I do think it lends itself to that, where, you know, you're sometimes you're just better off saying goodbye and shaking hands. And by the way, it's never really a bad thing, at least how I view it, from opportunity cost, to have a player complete the full term of his deal.
Mm-hmm.
You signed him to the contract. Why not just have him play all the way out through the playoffs and then let him walk? Why is that such a, from a quote asset management standpoint, teams fear that in a real way. And I think that's probably a bit of an antiquated thinking in terms of now look at all of the cap space that you could have to go out and make changes to your team. Like Carolina is a great example. They squeezed every last drop out of Brady Shea and Brett Pesce and purchased all of the very best years of their career. Why is it such a tragedy to have those guys end up walking for nothing? You had a great playoff runs. You gave yourself one last shot last year to try and get over the hump and go on a deep run. It didn't happen, but it's okay that they end up leaving.
You mentioned Columbus there really quickly. I know they had a bit of a grace period to catch up to the cap floor. Just any mm-hmm. updates on that, if they would be a bit more active here moving forward?
I do think they're looking around. They're considering their options. And just from a pure math perspective, you guys know that the cap is calculated on a daily basis. So if you were ultimately going to end up trading away pieces when it comes to the deadline, that would be days left in the remainder of the season that they're not on your cap and you're not spending. So it would probably, if there is a certain, we don't know the definition of the grace period and when they would need to get up to the salary cap floor. But if you're planning on subtracting later, you're probably going to want to add in, you know, the relative short term to try and get that process moving and bank more money spent on the cap for as many days as possible, particularly if you're going to do it anyway.
Well, and continuing the conversation of slated to be UFAs, and, you know, we'll see how many of these guys actually hit the market. Because, you know, at the top end, you look at a guy like, you know, Mikko Rantanen, and even Brock Besser, and we'll get to here in a second, Mitch Marner. It's pretty enticing. We'll see if any of these guys actually make it to market to begin with. But on Brock Besser, Bick and I were talking about this before the show. Not only has he got off to a great start this year, last year he scored 40 goals as well. We know the American team for the Four Nations is going to be loaded, but this is a player who could very well be on this team and maybe does show well during that. I mean, if you're the Canucks, if you want to get this guy signed, as far as the cap going up in a few years and him having a 40-goal year, like, it would it not be better off for you to start negotiating pretty soon to get something done if you want to keep him? Because the longer this takes, he's only going to add more feathers to his cap.
Well, that's the bet, right? I mean, I think it's from both sides' perspective, right? Brock Besser has now shouldered the risk of playing into his contract year. And, you know, I think from a Canucks perspective, they were probably looking at this scenario and situation saying, we have one statistical outlier season last year, the 40-goal year. I think his career average, if I'm not mistaken, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, was 27 goals a year. Does that sound right?
That's in the ballpark,
yeah. So you have one statistical outlier year. The Canucks made it really clear with some past players, and this angered them, that they're not going to pay a premium based on one moment in time. And I think that's probably a really smart approach and play, which is also why Bo Horvat plays on Long Island now. And I think when it comes to looking at the Besser situation, everyone understands that if he goes out and does it again, that it's going to certainly end up costing a lot more. But the risk, of course, if you go out and get it done ahead of time, is what happens if he is closer to the career average? It's still going to be somewhat expensive, but you probably end up saving some money. So it goes both ways, right?
Yeah, when it comes to just guys around the league right now that are pending UFAs, you know, Marner, Rantanen, Tavares, and Marchand's name, and it was mentioned over the weekend, Besser, obviously. And we've seen some teams take care of business here with whether it's RFAs or UFAs, Lafreniere and McCabe get signed. Do you think we'll see more business here soon?
Hard to say. I mean, Marchand has obviously, that's been ongoing for a while. I think in certain situations, teams are interested, like Florida with Sam Bennett, they'd love to get something done, I think, sooner rather than later. Specifically when it comes to Besser, the last time I checked in on it was probably about 10 days ago, and there was no negotiation to that point, and I don't know if anything was planned, but I should also point out and keep the caveat in mind that I also reported at some point that the Dallas Stars and Jake Ottinger had not engaged in any discussion, and within 5 days of that, they had announced a deal. So things sometimes can end up moving fast and quickly. With Ottinger's case, by the way, same agent as Brock Besser, that, you know, the Swayman deal came down and it was like, hey, yeah, just give me that. Like, I don't even know how much work was required. Same cap hit, same term, same length, same structure, same signing bonus. So sometimes it gets put on a silver platter for you and it's easy to get done. And I guess part of it will also depend on not just what is the Canucks' appetite to do it, but what is Brock Besser's mentality here? Is he really comfortable in Vancouver? Is he looking to push it in terms of what the market looks like for him and that AAV and ends up coming in at? Or is he just like, you know what? I really like it here. I like who I'm playing for in terms of a coach. I've had some of my best, played some of my best hockey here over the last 12 to 18 months. And I'm not concerned over getting every last dollar. Let's just get something done. I think that'd be an interesting thought process.
Yeah, it really would be. And I'm really fascinated to see kind of where this goes. On the Bruins, they're obviously not off to a great start. And the Marchand situation only creates bigger questions the more they lose. Is there a risk, not of the coach or GM move or anything, but that they look at it and say, maybe this is our time to do something with Marchand and move forward and really change the leadership group from what used to be in the past?
I'd be surprised just because he's such a staple on that team. And by the way, just still a really good, impactful player. Look, they just named him captain at the start of last season. He took to that really well. I think there's been some fascinating back and forth between Marchand, the leadership group, and Coach Jim Montgomery. He actually addressed it. I just was in Boston and did a podcast with him. He was saying, like, at one point during his first season with the Bruins, like, the leadership group came to him and said, hey, some of these things that you're doing are unacceptable. Like, this isn't how we want to do it. This isn't how we want to be coached. And he took that to heart, and they've changed it. So there's certainly been a lot of communication. The hunger to win there is real. And it's what ended up drawing someone in like Elias Lindholm. So I think, and it was really interesting to hear Montgomery say on that pod that he thinks they're going to be a worse regular season team this year. This was, you know, still during training camp. Worse regular season team, but better built for the playoffs. I think sometimes it's hard for us to qualify that, but I think he might be onto something.
The other team that's kind of in the same spot here, where things just seem prickly, similar to Boston, the New York Islanders with Roy and Lamoriello, and you know they feel a little stagnant in general with their overall roster construction. What do you make of the statement there?
Yeah, I think stagnant is probably being friendly or fair. it's stale. This is a team that hasn't changed much in like 6 years, more or less. That's what it feels like. And you know, I would tend to put the quotes and what was said when reading between the lines of what Patrick Waugh addressed post-game with their roster moves with signing Matt Martin and recalling Pierre Engvall, I would tend to dismiss that as nothing, except the fact that he felt the need to continue to say it and did it twice, after in which he wasn't made available before the game, plus his track record and history leaving Colorado and the power struggle that existed between himself and Joe Sakic. This is a really atypical head coach. This is an alpha. This is a, you know, someone that wants a lot of say in the operation and in some ways has earned that with his track record of success. but in other ways is stubbornness, I guess is what you could call it. It's also what kept him out of the NHL for a long time while he proved to be one of the very best coaches in all of hockey. So I would tend to say that there's probably more smoke there than anyone else will let on.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all, especially given the track record. I know last week with the Canucks playing the Blackhawks, we asked you about Chicago a little bit and about their long-term picture and their long-term plans, so to speak, and whether they feel like they're close or not. Well, Connor Bedard is already frustrated with losing. It's only year two. What does that say, though, about how hard it is to pull off these rebuilds? Even if you get a guy like Bedard, it's not just about, hey, we can take 7, 8, 9, 10 years. You still have to convince those players this is the place to be, and you have to show some success at some point, don't you?
I'm less concerned about that. I don't think there's any part of that that's crept into Bedard's game, and I spent a half hour with him one-on-one last week. I will say that it's just still really difficult to do. I mean, look at the Oilers. They've got two of the five best players in the world, and they still haven't gotten over the hump yet. And the Blackhawks have certainly less pieces than that. You could make the argument the Oilers have three if you include Evan Bouchard. The Blackhawks have one. Now, granted, it's the hardest, the franchise centerpiece, the face of your team, it's the hardest one to get. But where are they going to go out and find a Leon Draisaitl? Where are they going to go out and find, you know, a stud goalie to put in net? There's still lots of boxes that the Blackhawks have yet to check, and that part is going to be a continued work in progress. We're still probably, I'd say 2027 is the earliest that you would see the Blackhawks in the playoffs, and that might be a stretch because, like I pointed out last week, they have some vets that they brought in on short-term deals. Next year, those vets are going to be replaced by young guys who are just stepping into the NHL, and they're going to have their own growing pains. So it's a lengthy process no matter which way you cut it.
Yeah, you mentioned the Oilers would be, I guess, viewed as a success story through that team-building model. The Sabres have gone through their issues. Obviously, Eichel is gone in that whole process. And they've won three in a row here, I get it, but they're back to .500. But this still feels like a simmering pot here at some point that if this doesn't work in the short term, that it boils over. And suddenly we're looking at a team that's going to be asking themselves a lot of hard questions outside of just like a Byram because he's a new fit. Is there like bigger roster issues that might come to a foot at some point just this season?
See, that's the thing about Buffalo that I don't necessarily agree on. I love their roster. I love the pieces that they have. I think if you were to take their top four defense, I might only pick two other defense cores in the entire league that I'd rather have to build around than Buffalo. One would be Colorado, and the other one would be Boston. And when I say that, I'm saying purely top four, mm-hmm. like one through four. Obviously, the Canucks have a really attractive top pair, and then things start to get a little bit thinner a lot more quickly. When I look at that team, I don't say it's a roster flaw issue. I think their goaltending certainly is on the upswing, and they've got statistically still the youngest roster in the NHL, and sometimes on some nights by a pretty sizable margin, almost a full year in average age, that I look at that team and I say it's more of a structure issue. Mm-hmm. I think it's fair to question why Lindy Ruff, who had such a sloppy team in New Jersey last season that continued to make the same mistake after mistake, why they felt the need to go down that path and make that hire without even interviewing anyone else. That, to me, is the real question mark, I think, right now of the Sabres, is did they make the right choice for head coach?
Are you following a serious process as a serious organization, right? And I think that's kind of like, you know, something they need to do a bit better, I suppose. I mean, it was the same thing with Vancouver before they made the management change, right? It's like a lot of good talent, but do you have the right serious people in charge of making these decisions?
And that's why I love just even spending like a half hour around the Canucks at morning skate last week in Chicago. They're already I believe, making calls and trying to understand what the market looks like to improve this team's defense. I don't think anything's imminent. I don't think they're close, but I think they at least want to continue to push the envelope, and that should surprise absolutely no one, given the volume of deals that Patrick Alvin has made. They're not going to sit back and just say, oh, well, things are good, they'll always be good. It's like, let's continue to push and push and improve.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think even going back to the offseason, even before the season began, anytime I asked about, you know, what's going on as far as any signings, any trades imminent, it's like, no, well, I mean, we're checking in on stuff, but they're not a front office that takes like a week or two off. Like, they're constantly, I think, working the phones and trying to find what's out there.
And if you're a Canucks fan, you want nothing more than that.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, Frank, listen, we're way late. Thanks so much for your time, as always. Can't wait to chat with you again next week.
Sounds good. Enjoy the game, guys. See ya.
You got it. That is Frank Saravalli, Daily Faceoff. Great, as always, here on Canucks Central. Okay, we are way late. It's Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. We'll expand on some of the things Frank had to say. The Canucks always active on the trade market. We'll maybe dive into some of the things he said about the Canucks, Brock Besser as well. Plus, does tanking really work? I'm just kidding. We'll get into that a little bit. Connor Bedard already voicing some displeasure. All right, it is Canucks Central coming to you live from Rogers Arena on Sportsnet 650.
The most opinionated Canucks show out there. Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.